Hello and welcome to a very special instalment of the Full Force Monthly, brought to you by Hoarder, the collector's app. I am Christopher McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and in this episode, we are delving into the upcoming Transformers G.I. Joe crossover movie with a movie special monthly. Joining me on this episode is the General himself, Justin Generals Joe's Bell. Okay then, we are going to discuss the most recent announcement from Paramount at CinemaCon and much more. So what is it, Justin?
It's the Full Force Monthly.
Yes, it is. Oh, man, how you doing?
Smooth like butter. I'm good. Good. It's smooth, like I never left.
Smooth like something. It's good to have you back, man. It's been ages.
Back. I know. It's been a long time. Been a long
good
time.
To have you
You've
back,
been mate. Rocking it with Pat and doing a great job.
Yeah. Doing okay. We need to do more of these, though. We need to do more of the kind of movie-based kind of shows. But
yeah, it's going to start heating up pretty soon here, I think. So.
Yeah. We've got loads to kind of get stuck into, really. I've got to get your opinion on a few things, really. But the main one we'll start off with, I guess, is that kind of logo that's kind of popped up. But yeah, that the CinemaCon announcement more than anything. But there's a logo attached, and that's the most important thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the first sign that something is real. I mean, I know it's kind of the logo was debuted at CinemaCon. I don't think we actually saw it, but this is sort of based on what people have described. Yeah. Is that correct? So,
what we'll be seeing in a moment is going to be the logo that is effectively kind of fan mock-up, but based on audience kind of descriptions.
Yep.
So what we might as well get stuck into it then, bud. Nearly forgot to change the graphics in that little bit of time. yes, so let's get stuck in then. Now, Bosch, there you go. This is kind of like the kind of based on audience member descriptions. They were saying, I think a lot of people were saying, it's like that old logo that we used to see with the Decepticons and Cobra combined, but with an Autobot logo instead of a Decepticon one. So this is what most people have mocked up, and then what the audience members have then said, yeah, that's basically what it was. It was an all-white version of this, I think with 2026 below it. But a couple of things to get into first then, Justin. First off, mate, before we get into the kind of logo aspect of things, the most important thing I would probably say is that, I mean, do you think the latest announcement means that they are going full force? That's when the name of the movie gets said in the movie, into a crossover movie now. Or do you think G.I. Joe will slowly be eased in still?
It certainly seems like they're going full bore into crossover mode. Yeah, I think it's, you know, the fact that the logo is so prominently combining the two properties, I think they are using it as a selling point. I do find it interesting that, and I don't disagree, that the Cobra logo is really what they consider the more prominent kind of showcase. Because from what we've heard, you know, it's a crossover movie, and I'm sure, you know, G.I. Joe doesn't exist without Cobra, but it certainly seemed like, at least from the teaser at the end of Rise of the Beast, that this was a G.I. Joe focused sort of collaboration, like Michael Kelly was obviously representing G.I. Joe, and that's where the sort of linkage was going to be, but the logo is prominently Cobra. So it just begs the question, you know, are we going to see both G.I. Joe and Cobra reflected in this movie? Are we going to start with G.I. Joe as a crossover, bring Cobra in afterwards? It's an interesting idea. I think it could go either way. I mean, obviously, Cobra is the big part of the logo, so you have to think that Cobra's going to be in there somewhere.
Right.
But at the same time, it might just be featured that way because Cobra is more of a well-known, you know, icon. That single logo represents the property better than any of the sort of star-based logos that they've ever, or the post office sort of shield logo they ever did for any of the G.I. Joe stuff. I think it makes sense, but it does seem like they are very much talking up the crossover. They're not talking about a Transformers movie with cameos from G.I. Joe. They are talking about a G.I. Joe Transformers movie.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing I'm gleaning from it, is the fact that we've gone from this thing where, you know, previous conversations had been, we're doing G.I. Joe is venturing into the Transformers universe. I mean, you can't avoid that. It's in Rise of the Beasts. It's effectively official at this point.
Yeah.
But at that stage, it's going to be a Transformers movie next, and it's going to have elements of G.I. Joe incorporated into it. And because of that, I was, you know, it was just like, okay, well, good. They're doing the slow burn. They're easing it in. We'll probably see a little bit of it in the next Transformers movie. There'll probably be the, you know, the kind of like extra background addition of, like, you know, they'll creep in here and there kind of thing. Mm-hmm. you know, made like main like long-time fans will probably notice and identify certain kind of clues, but for the most part it'll be like stealthily done. Now it looks like they're saying no, it's got a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover movie in yeah. development. Now the other thing you could say is they could have just thrown this together in a kind of way to be like, well, yeah, like you said, iconography, all yeah. that kind of stuff. But I suppose if it is kind of in development at the moment, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of stuff that isn't done yet. There's going to be, you know, scripts probably still need to be very heavily revised. If not written at this point. And with that, would you say that that's probably more important at this stage based on what we've had in the past? Because, I mean, are we kidding ourselves that this crossover could be the movie that finally gives us a successful and critically sound product?
Ah, man, you know, I mean, it doesn't have the best track record. You know, I would love to say Lorenzo Di Bonaventura is going to finally, you know, get the right pieces in place to actually, you know, produce some quality content, and maybe we'll be surprised, but it's gonna come down to, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, yeah. You know, we've been burned so many times before that, you know, even trailers and stuff, this looks like it's gonna be so great. And yeah. And to be fair, I think in each of the three G.I. Joe live action films we've seen so far, there has been pockets of great things in those films that just didn't present a cohesive overall yeah. quality movie. I mean, even in Snake Eyes, which in my humble opinion is probably the worst of the three movies, there were still these small pockets of pretty interesting elements, pretty cool elements that could have been fleshed out to a better, you know, overall production. So I'm keeping my expectations realistic, I believe. That doesn't mean I'm not going to get all hyped up and twisted up and everything with every trailer or reveal that comes. I'm going to get excited. You know, it's just the way I am. Seeing, you know, my favorite brand for 40 years kind of reflected in mass media, kind of pop culture relevance, is an exciting thing, regardless of how, you know, what the end result ends up being.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will believe it when I see it, as far as, you know, quality, you know, is concerned, because I think Bumblebee sort of refreshed the Transformers brand in a really great, refreshing way, and it was yeah. very entertaining, and I loved it. Rise of the Beast, I felt like, took a tiny bit of a step back from that. It was still entertaining, don't get me wrong. I still enjoyed Rise of the Beast. It just felt like a little bit of a retreat back into the Bayverse sort of style.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? You know, maybe we'll all be surprised. But I think you're right. I mean, it's going to come down to the script. Mm. And you know, I hope in some small way that somebody is sort of paying attention to what Skybound is doing, because I'll tell you what, Skybound has been kicking my ass. I mean, they've been doing great comics since this thing launched. I mean, I think we've all kind of questioned, you know, why, what is so difficult about G.I. Joe? You know, there's been some, you know, isolated spots of good stuff through IDW and Devil's Due. But Skybound is just, it's fantastic. I think it's blending Transformers and G.I. Joe in an almost seamless, perfect way in my mind.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of things right. And I really hope that the Paramount folks are kind of opening an eye towards what is being done there to reflect that in live action form. I think that it could really provide a sort of a rich tapestry to tell stories from. But yeah, I mean, that's, they got to get right before they do anything else, really.
Skybound. I mean, it would be very, I think it would be really cool if they,
yeah.
I mean, I know they don't necessarily cross over comics and movies right. in that sense. Like,
and we're not going to see Cobra Law on the big screen. I mean, let's be frank. They're not going to do that element of the Cobra Commander, you know, limited.
Could
series,
you imagine?
I don't believe, but
could you imagine?
Yeah.
Just Pythona infiltrating the Terradrome. I mean, it would just be nuts if that was a live action.
Yeah. I don't think we can hope for that, but at least looking at the Duke limited series, I think what they did with that, sort of taking away some of the fantastical elements of the Cobra Commander side.
Yeah.
Very realistic, you know, these robots, you know, Duke himself kind of sees it happen and is, you know, trying to further this conspiracy of the alien robots. Nobody really believes him. He's, you know, kind of fighting against his own, then runs into Mars, this huge, you know, technology firm that is using this Cybertronian technology. I mean, it's kind of what we've talked about as a good way to blend the two properties, and Skybound is actually putting it pen to paper and making it happen and doing it in a very, very cool way.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's probably a difficult question, but obviously the writing and direction are going to be very important here.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, I know it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, but is it ever do they ever get it right? And in some cases, I think they have done, but not with Joe, but with like with Transformers, they've managed to kind of capture something quite good in like the first Transformers movie and the Bumblebee movie. I thought Rise of Beasts, as much as I really enjoyed the fact that G.I. Joe was incorporated towards the end, I feel like it was a little bit kind of loose, say the least. It wasn't it wasn't a return to form, I would say, but it was definitely better than what we'd seen in the last couple of Transformers movies before Bumblebee.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not as good as the original Transformers movie. It's not as good as Bumblebee. It's probably close to kind of Transformers 2. I seem to remember that Transformers 2 had a lot of the elements of Transformers 1, but was starting to introduce more ridiculousness. And
they ramped up all of the different aspects, I thought, in the second movie. It was like they got the balance right in the first one.
Yeah.
And the second one was just like more humor. And it was like, now it's kind of making it a bit corny and a bit stupid and a bit silly. And then they ramped up everything else and they extended it felt like, and made it a little bit not as cohesive.
Exactly.
So I think, I think you're right. I would say Transformers and Bumblebee, the first one and Bumblebee are up there.
Yeah.
Then I think it goes kind of like Rise of the Beasts and two are probably on a level, and then the rest can just be thrown in the bin
and
set on fire.
Piled together into, exactly.
But anywho, that is, I suppose, the latest information that we have. Not much else to go on, but what we've decided to do is we're going to get stuck into a sort of fantasy casting next, mate, where we're going to pick a few characters we'd like to see in the movie and also apply some actors to them as well. And obviously, you guys at home, you can play along as well and obviously throw in the comments what you would like to see in terms of characters and also actors in their places. Yes, so we are talking fantasy casting next, Justin. And of course, we're going to do this one at a time. We've chosen three characters, not necessarily in order, but I've put them in a sort of order just for the point of structure. So Justin, if you want to take us through your first option, please, and talk us through what you chose and why.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge doing this sort of thing.
It is.
Just because I think we want to stay realistic. I mean, we want to pull out some cool characters, some cool actors and cool characters, of course. But at the same time, you can't have every single ensemble member of the ensemble cast be a $25 million a movie actor. So you've got to balance it. And I may have stretched it in a couple of different places here, I started off with Destro first, and
there we go.
What I kind of pictured with Destro is kind of maybe sort of what you saw in Rise of Cobra a little bit, you know, primarily a businessman with some sort of somewhat harder elements. Like Christopher Eccleston was fine, but I really wanted to see somebody who's a little bit tougher, a little bit more rugged. I chose Colin Farrell for the Destro actor.
Interesting.
You know, he's not Scottish. He's got that Irish heritage, but well, don't tell the Scottish or the Irish that I said that. I think he's got that accent. He's got that kind of menacing feel to him. I think he's got a wide range.
Penguin shows you that. Much, penguin. Doesn't it?
I happen to be watching a new a TV series on Apple Plus right now, which is called Sugar, which he plays sort of private detective in that movie. And, it's a fairly, straightforward role, at least at the moment, but he's playing it with a real certain kind of gravitas that kind of lends something to it. And of course, you know, he was Bullseye in the Daredevil movie back in the early 2000s.
Oh, God, yeah.
He was a little ridiculous there, but I think he's got the ability to do, to bring all sorts of cool nuance to the Destro character. And I don't feel like he's a break the bank kind of actor. I think he's a name that people, pay attention to, but I don't think he's going to demand a ton of salary.
Yeah. A little target should be put on Destro's helmet as the homage. And that's really cool, actually. And I hadn't really thought about Destro being in this one yet, but that is a really good point. Like, I mean, he's going to want to be involved because Transformers offer an opportunity in the
in the kind of weapons up kind of right. scenario.
You figure the link between these worlds is, the Cybertronian technology and how the humans can use it to their advantage. And I figured Destro was the perfect guy to kind of be that sort of person that latches on to that Cybertronian technology and is kind of ahead of the game compared to everybody else and sort of wants to control it and rule it and do what he does with it. So I think that's kind of
a bold move. Colin Farrell to play Red Jackal instead.
There you go. That could be cool.
That's all I'm saying. No, that's really good shout for your first one there, Justin. I really like Colin Farrell as an option there. And again, like you say, it's not like, rock level money, right. And it's not breaking the bank necessarily, but he would be needing to be compensated quite, handsomely in a role like this. Plus, would he do it? That's another one. Yeah. I mean, like, we look it's at a lot of these actors that we're going to be talking about, and I think a lot of it's going to come down to, but would they say yes?
Right.
But that's a good shout. I like that one. That's a really good, good first go. Now, I have gone with, for my first option, Stalker. And I've gone for a current actor in John David Washington, who has done some phenomenal work recently in Tenet and The Creator, which I actually really enjoyed. It didn't really get like a lot of traction or do kind of crazy numbers, but it was a really good movie. And Tenet is just mind blowing. So I really liked him in both of those films. And I thought he's really good. Like, I mean, he's more of a kind of leading man, really, more than anything else. But I thought he'd be really great in like a stalker role in this kind of like movie franchise. Yeah. But again, he might be one of those people that is a little bit more, he might be beyond it. Do you know what I mean? He might be past it in much the same way that Colin Farrell might be.
True.
But this is our fantasy casting.
Exactly.
And the fact that he's just done a lot of kind of military-based stuff and he's done it really well. And future military, let's face it, like future and past if you count Tenet, but I love the fact that just thinking about him as Stalker, I think would be just a great for one would give Stalker a phenomenal actor to portray that character that I think has definitely been he's kind of been missing for a lot of the live action movies, so to see Stalker be brought in, and John David Washington I think would do a great job in that role.
There's all these rumors that in Rise of Cobra Marlon Wayans' character was supposed to be Stalker, but they didn't really like his code name, given the connotations that it carries these days, which is kind of why he got reworked into Ripcord. But yeah, he as a character he has not been represented at all, which is a shame because especially for fans of the comic, he is such a central linchpin to the massive team in the comics that it seems a shame to leave him out of it.
Such a positive, like, ray of light as well in that. I mean, the way Larry wrote him, he was always very, like, very much the person that always had the right thing to say at the right time, or like the important prophetic kind of thing to say at the right time. So, like, I feel like, I don't know. I think there's a nice marriage here with character and actor going on. Would you like to see John David Washington in that role?
Oh, yeah. I think he'd be great. Yeah. I think, you've got a lot of the right hallmarks there where he is a solid actor, not a budget buster. He's got some really good roles under him. I mean, anybody who does a Christopher Nolan movie has definitely got some acting chops, that.
Big
so
time.
I think he's a great choice. I love it.
Awesome. Right. That's our first choices. Justin, take us through your next one, please, sir.
So my next one, I will admit, I kind of I shoehorned the character in a little bit just because I really wanted the actress to be involved. but I think the character does fit pretty nicely as well. And I went with Lady J as the character and Rebecca Ferguson to play Lady J. Similar to Colin Farrell, she's probably at a point right now where this may not be the kind of project that she either wants to do or that can afford to have her do it.
Right.
Especially lately with, Dune and, the Silo series and Apple Plus and the Mission Impossible movie. She's really kind of exploded in popularity the last couple of years. But
really good actor as well. Really good.
She's fantastic. Yeah. She's one of my favorites. And I think she would work really well for Lady J, and kind of the way I sort of figured Lady J might be involved is, she's an intelligence operative. I could see, as the Transformers kind of emerge on Earth, before the military is kind of thrown into the mix, they're going to want some intelligence folks kind of working alongside the Transformers, figuring out what makes them tick, you know, doing that sort of stuff behind the scenes before they have a full-blown sort of military engagement. So I figure Lady J could kind of play the role of liaison, so to speak, sort of an intelligence, you know, member of the intelligence community who's got some military background who can kind of talk the Transformers talk and maybe works alongside Michael Kelly or whatever to sort of get the two teams working better together. And, you know, Rebecca Ferguson's just kind of a badass. So I'd love to just see her play the character. I think she'd do a really great job, even if we are getting close to our threshold of being able to afford these actors and finding them who are willing to do it. Although I would argue that maybe what we could do is cross our fingers that they put together a good enough film that it would draw these people in, and, you know, and if she's going to do something like a Mission Impossible, she would be willing to do something like G.I. Joe as well.
Good point. And I there's nothing to add on that. No notes. I think that's spot on. Love the fact that, you know, Lady J is in that, you know, in that conversation, and also love the fact that, you know, you chose Rebecca Ferguson to do so. And it's one of those ones as well that I don't think it's even crossed my mind at any point, even though I think she's great. She's been awesome in everything I've seen her in. And I would absolutely, I think she fits perfectly into that Lady J sort of kind of character. I'm well into that. And I think, let's do it. It was also impressive that I found the one picture of her holding Lady J's spear gun as well, wasn't it?
That was nice. I was impressed. Yeah, I saw that little combination image. I was like, hey, nice job.
It's cut off, but trust me, it's the spear gun.
I'll take your word for it.
Now, I also went for a female role in my next choice. And I was kind of like, I was weighing up, like, you know, my first thought actually was Karen Gillan for Scarlet, because I thought she's brilliant and she's awesome in, like, you know, Jumanji. She's amazing in the MCU as Nebula. She's got, you know, she's done loads of these kind of, I mean, she's done the nerdy stuff, you know what I mean? And I think as Scarlet, I think we should do a really good Scarlet. And I think, you know, she can do accents. You wouldn't even know it was Karen Gillan under that Nebula mask, honestly. I'd love to see her do Scarlet. But my actual choice switched again, because we were talking about this for ages, and I went with the Baroness and Ana de Armas. And I was kind of thinking, the only reason I kind of thought of this at the time was because I initially put General Ortega in this role, didn't I? And I was saying, like, to you, hey, do you think General Ortega works for the Baroness? And then I thought, actually, I think Ana de Armas would be better, because she's done a lot of this action stuff already. She just did an action kind of rom-com with Chris Evans. In fact, that's where this image is taken from. And I thought, oh God, yeah, she could actually be a pretty cool Baroness. I mean, what are your thoughts on that one?
No, I agree. I think it's great. And I think, isn't she going to do, like, the ballerina, that next John Wick movie that's coming out too? I think she's doing that as well. So she's definitely got the action movie chops. So I think that's a great choice. You know, she's another one of those actresses that is really great in whatever she's in, has a decent range of roles, you know, under her belt. And I think she'd do great in her role as the Baroness. I would love to see that. And it would make sense kind of from a storyline perspective, the Baroness and Destro sort of working alongside each other, in this sort of, crossover format. I think it's great.
It's a shame no one picked Flint, because then we could have had the couples in both of our...
I thought about that, although I kind of purposefully stayed away from it, because I didn't want Lady J to come out as just, you know, kind of Flint's girlfriend, so to speak. You know, she's got her own sort of, sort of specialty and what have you. But
absolutely. No, I totally agree with you on that one. Anyway, Ana de Armas for the Baroness is what I'm thinking. Your one next, buddy. Your is the last choice that we'll go through for today. Take us through it.
Well, this was a team effort. You know, I think you and I kind of hashed this one out together. I think this is, you know, an actor.
You had to be involved.
The character is a no-brainer, and then the actor really kind of
has to be.
The prominence he has these days, yet he has not quite reached superstardom yet. I think it's a no-brainer role. So the character is Chuckles, and the actor is Alan Rickson, which is, you know, everybody probably knows as Reacher, and he's about to star in another movie with Henry Golding, and actually, with Henry Golding and Henry Cavill, Ungentlemanly Warfare, or whatever that upcoming movie is, that Guy Ritchie movie, I think. So he's got some G.I. Joe links right there, starring alongside Henry Golding. But but I think we decided that, you know, Chuckles is clearly poised to kind of take a bigger role in the universe. I mean, I don't think we know for sure whether this, you know, ever vigilant film is ever going to come out. But Chuckles was rumored to be sort of the headliner of that film. So clearly he's on the mind of these movie producers. And, I think, Alan Ritchson kind of playing that role kind of plays back a little bit to how big and imposing Chuckles was in the movie. You know, it's kind of a fun throwback to that. Plus, he's a great actor. I think he works as sort of an undercover military guy. He's obviously got the action chops from Reacher.
Great.
You know, I just think he's got the personality. I think he'd really do a great job. And I kind of saw Chuckles' role as similar to Lady J in a way, where he's sort of an undercover / intelligence operative who's kind of liaisoning with the Transformers as they indoctrinate them into the more full-blown sort of military collaboration format. So I think the character makes a lot of sense. I think the actor would be really cool to see him kind of front and center in a G.I. Joe movie. A lot of cool stuff that could happen with this particular pairing. And full credit to you, you kind of spun up the idea first and then gracefully let me kind of run with it a little bit afterwards. But.
Well, I saw a lot of talk about people wanting him for Duke, and I was kind of it just felt a little bit on the nose. But then also, like, I see Alan Ritchson, again, great actor. He could do either role and it wouldn't really make much difference, I think. But I saw him more Chuckles because I think he's got more personality to do that sort of like undercover, but like charming, kind of fun, kind of like, you know, interesting guy who's also able to take care of himself. With Duke, I kind of feel like Duke needs to be a little bit more almost like not as imposing, but certainly like in terms of the, you know, the personality, he has to be more kind of like leadership sort of quality. And again, like Alan does great in Reacher, and Reacher is an amazing show, and he does in fact lead a team. So Duke would be a perfectly fine person to, you know, character to jump in. But when I thought of Chuckles and the fact that Chuckles' name has been out so often recently in the movie stuff, it just felt like a nice combination. It felt more natural to me than Alan going into Duke. Like, but him in Chuckles seem to be a way more kind of natural kind of vibe, in my opinion.
I totally agree.
But that does lead us into my choice, which I switch gears a little bit, and that's not a Transformers pun. It is a little bit for both Switch and Gears.
and Switch plus Gears. The G.I. Joe character was Switch Gears. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. No, every pun in all three of those puns were intended. Now, I've chosen Duke next for my one, but I've gone with Bill Skarsgård. And the reason I've done that is because he's just been in a really interesting and crazy kind of film, action film, called Boy Kills World. And again, like, I was kind of checking that out, and I was watching him in it, and I just thought, like, and he plays a mute assassin, which is hilarious. So, I mean, surely Snake Eyes in that sense. But no, I kind of thought like maybe he could be like a good Duke. And this is what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, he's ripped and he's kind of like whatever, but he doesn't have the same kind of like, he's not like 17'5" like Alan Ritchson is. So I feel like there'd be a better kind of like, you know, poise, like imposing scenario going on here. It would be different with Duke. And I think, and that was just my, I thought maybe this could be an opportunity. Because again, he's not like to that point of like, you know, break the bank sort of scenario. You know, he's only really just kind of like sneaking in, you know, like he's done a lot of movies, but in terms of action, Boy Kills World is the first main thing he's done really in that sense. So like, I don't know. I thought maybe he could have the look for it and he could have the vibe for Duke. What are your thoughts? It might be completely off base, this one.
I don't think so. I think it works really well. I mean, I think he's, you know, he's a great actor. I mean, he's one of that Skarsgård clan. I think there's Stellan,
15 of them,
the elder father, and then there's like seven kids or something crazy like that. But I mean, I think he's, you know, acting absolutely runs in that family. And I think he's, you know, he's great, you know, from what I can tell. I don't know if I've seen much that he's been in, but I've certainly seen some of the trailers for Boy Kills World, and he's got that kind of fighting attitude and You know, it's got that look and that feel, and I think he could do a great job as Duke, absolutely. And I think it kind of fits with not finding a no-name actor, but maybe a slightly lower profile actor to round out the budget a little bit and you know, and give him a chance to make a name for himself in a pseudo leading role of sorts. I think it's a great choice.
There's also the possibility here as well of a kind of like mix and match thing with the Chuckles and the Duke options that we've come up with. And, you know, I think Bill Skarsgård could also do Chuckles and Alan could do Duke if that was like a possibility as well for them. And I think it would be one of those things, wouldn't it, that obviously we're not involved in this actual official process. But if in doing the auditions and the casting, they find that they work for the other roles or whatever, then friggin' great. But like, I don't know, I just looked at it and personally, I'm not in casting, obviously. And the other thing is as well, there's something we're not taking into consideration here, not unknowns necessarily, but definitely kind of fringe, kind of young kind of actors that could be on the kind of precipice of doing kind of, you know, different things. Because I mean... is it Anthony Ramos who played Sonic in Rise of the Beast? Like, you know, he was definitely up and coming, but he'd done some amazing things. I'd seen him in all sorts. I'd seen him in Hamilton, the stage show, but there's also on the Disney Channel and everything. But I saw him on like loads of interesting things on, and he you could see his rise a little bit going into that Transformers movie. So like I'm not saying Bill Skarsgård's going the same direction, but I think there are a lot of actors that we're not seeing right now because we're not really in that field and we're not really seeing that background sort of information.
Right. And I'm out of touch when it, you know, we've mentioned this a bunch of times, you know, I'm not, you know, in the pop culture lexicon these days, you know, I just had my 50th birthday, you know, a couple months ago. So, you know, I'm not exactly the, you know, following TMZ every day and know who the hot new actors and actresses are. So,
one is. Are they? That's hilarious.
I'm sure somebody is. It's not me, but I'm sure somebody is.
Big 5-0, 50th anniversary, Justin Bell, unbelievable. Did you come in special packaging with the star? And,
I did. I came in a 2-pack with a repeater repaint next to me.
With that hit and run repaint.
Yeah, again. Sure. Another hit and run repaint. The ninth hit and run repaint.
That's amazing. That's great. Those are our options for a little fantasy casting that we wanted to do. We'll probably do a bigger version of this close to the time, Justin, because we can do like, you know, when we start hearing about more information coming out, making more like judgments of what characters might be involved. I mean, usually we start hearing casting at a certain period as well, don't we? And it's like kind of takes the fun out of our fantasy casting completely. But I'm sure there'll be a point where we get more information about this and we can do this again and maybe throw a couple more characters in there. Maybe some Transformers characters and get some voice actors in there.
Could do that. We got to make sure that if we pick Transformers characters, though, we pick characters that are totally random and don't match their vehicle mode at all, or else won't match with the film. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know of an example to use, but that's Cliff Jumper, even though he's a white pickup truck or something.
You can be as random as you want with the Transformers.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, just throw a name on anything. Even if they died in one of the other movies, who cares? Just throw their name on.
Amazing. Right, next up then, we're going to be doing a little version therapy, a little twist. Right, we are back with our regular monthly segment Version Therapy, which is where we choose a single G.I. Joe or Cobra character and have a discussion on what action figure version is their best. Now, of course, we are all probably going to have different opinions on this based on when we were born, personal experience and so on, but that's where the fun lies. Feel free to let us know who your favourite action figure version is and why in the comments below as well. We are going to change it up a bit here though, and based on the theme for this month's episode, we are doing our favourite movie figure instead. Now, we both agreed that our choices had to be from one of the movie lines of figures. This includes the animated movie Rise of Cobra, Retaliation and Snake Eyes, and that they had to either have appeared in the film or be in the style of that movie's universe. We couldn't just choose Quinn from Retaliation, for example, but we could have Rise of Cobra Shipwreck due to his stylistic design from the movie. Hope that makes sense. Hope that makes sense for you as well, Justin.
Oh, you lost me. Sorry.
Already, you're already just
I'm done. Yep, I'm out.
So, Let's start then with your choice, and maybe talk us through your thought process of how you went into this, basically, as well.
Yeah, you know, this was much more difficult than I thought it would be. You know, whatever your opinions are of the actual G.I. Joe movies, the toys associated with every movie that's come out have been really, really great. I mean, there's a really rich selection of figures that represent characters from the films that were done really well. Rise of Cobra, you know, so many people panned that movie, but there was like 100-something figures released for it, and many of them were really, really amazing. Like the Accelerator suit figures were as ridiculous as those Accelerator suits are in the film. The figures representing those Accelerator suit figures were, those characters were really, really well done. You know, they really made some great leaps forward in articulation and sculpting right through that period of time. So, it was a much harder decision to make, simply because of the vast number of available choices there were. In the end, for kind of, and then, you know, of course, you know, the classified figures where Snake Eyes comes, you know, into play, you know, those were only four figures, but very well done, very accurate to their screen representations. The slightly, you know, bigger scale added more opportunities for detail and stuff. But I kind of, you know, joined together a couple of different schools of thought when I made my choice. It was sort of authenticity to what you saw on the screen, sculpting, design, you know, a little bit of uniqueness. You know, price point came into consideration for me too, how available the figure was, and I ended up settling on G.I. Joe Retaliation Ultimate Roadblock.
Nice.
And the, you know, the reason for that, you know, he was sort of the showcase character of the G.I. Joe Retaliation film. He was kind of the pillar from which the entire film was built around. 4-inch scale, you know, so a smaller figure, crammed with really great articulation.
So many accessories as well.
Goodness. And that was another thing that really kind of put him over the top, is that the whole Battle Kata format, which you didn't really get to see in the film as much as it was talked up ahead of time. Sort of those hand guards that are replaceable. You can make pistols out of them or knives. And even in a 4-inch scale, they managed to make all of those different accessories fit together, stay together really well, securely. And all of the accessories, when they weren't in use, could fit on his vest too. You talk about how Classified is so great with the way they can fit all their accessories on the figure typically. Doing that at a 6-inch scale is a whole different world than doing it at the 4-inch scale. And yet they were able to make it happen at this 4-inch scale. So I think he really was sort of the landmark of the G.I. Joe Retaliation franchise. The likeness for Dwayne The Rock Johnson sculpted in his face was really well done for that scale. He was a very large figure, very imposing, came with so many different weapons, so many different accessories, very screen accurate. There's just a lot of reasons to really love this figure. And I think this little wave that he was included in, you know, also included the G.I. Joe Retaliation Snake Eyes, and, you know, Chris mentioned before, Quinn kind of making his first appearance ever in the G.I. Joe Retaliation line. You know, even the Cobra Trooper from that line, that camouflaged urban style Cobra Trooper with great articulation, you know, screen accurate detailing. Agent Mouse was another one from this sort of era that was a pretty simple figure overall, but very well done, very well sculpted, well articulated, came with good weapons.
Mouse is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just, they did all of the things right. And then plus, I mean, you know, it's silly, you know, adult collectors will kind of scoff at it, but each figure came with like a working zip line, and it's kind of silly, but for kids, it was great. And you had this ghost kind of flying vehicle that you could hang the zip lines from. And it was just, it managed to bring forward a screen accurate iteration of the character that appealed to the collectors, yet had some kid play value. It really blended that child like play with the adult collectors in a way that they've really kind of gotten away from now. So yeah, it was just, it's, you know, you could walk into a Walmart and buy it for, you know, $10, and it's just, it's pretty amazing sort of where things were back in 2012, 2013 compared to where they are now, and, you know, from prices and from availability and stuff like that. So I just think it was a really unique point in the line, and I think that's really encapsulated how great, you know, in spite of the quality of the film, which may be dubious, how great the toys were. And it really showcases how Hasbro really is an action figure company first. And when they have the opportunity to make these action figures, they do a stellar job, even if the, you know, the product on film doesn't quite live up to the action.
Doesn't quite reach it. Yeah. I remember as well when these toys were kind of revealed for Retaliation, and how they had the kind of stars of the movie kind of at, you know, the event shown. Yeah, that was so cool. Yeah, that's the Toy Fair I missed, of course. Thanks. Thanks for that. But no, that was really cool to see. So no, I'm with you on this one. I think it's a cracking figure. Yeah. And the other thing I will mention, do you remember the other battle Carter Roadblock that had the things permanently fused to his hands?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I mean, this was like one of the first releases.
Yeah, I mean, if
this was a step up.
If you compare the first Roadblock that was released for the G.I. Joe Retaliation line to this one, it's like, how did they get from there to here? I mean, light years difference between that first figure that had limited leg articulation and those things fixed on its hands, and then you got to this like fully articulated, fantastic, just representation. And it's funny because in many cases you go and you see these fantastic movies and you look at the characters on the screen and you're like, wow, you know, I wish they could make toys that, you know, were as cool as the characters on the screen. But you go to G.I. Joe and it's like, it flips the script. You find a really cool toy in the set on the shelves. You're like, wow, I wish they could make a movie that was nearly as cool as the action figures. it's kind of funny that way. But.
That's so true, though, as well. No, this is a great choice. And again, Retaliation was that, again, the Rise of Cobra was the same. Like, the figures were incredible. And then going into Retaliation, they kind of leveled up. And one thing I will say is that I was this close to going with the Kiko for the Classified series, because again, as much as the Snake Eyes movie has, you know, fallen very short of all the expectations, there were some excellent possibilities and opportunities in there. One of them was a Kiko as a new character into the line. I really liked her in the actual film as well. I thought, you know, she was acted perfectly, brilliantly fine. And also the actual character itself was a good addition to the Arashikage. And it was a shame that she was kind of like not in it more often, and it was not the film overall struggled with its writing more than anything.
Yeah.
But the figure and the action figures for the film were great. And I really liked the Baroness figure as well. I thought that was phenomenal. But the Akiko for me stood out as a real high point for Classified at that stage. And I loved the figure so much so, and I'm not surprised that this has happened, but the fact that she's been utilized again and again for repaints, Blue Ninjas, Viper, et cetera, et cetera. So we've seen that, you know, it's a successful figure and a successful, you know, in my opinion, a successful addition to the line. But I didn't go with that because... The one thing I cannot really escape is how bloody good the Hot Toys were in the Retaliation era. The Bruce Willis I have, the General Joe Colton, is phenomenal, but I went with Snake Eyes because this figure is one of the only times I've ever seen this particular image of the Hot Toys Retaliation Snake Eyes. Bear in mind, this is an action figure, but you know that the fact that this image, this particular one we're looking at, often gets used by media outlets to talk about movie-based things with G.I. Joe. So if they talk about the Snake Eyes movie every 5 minutes, which they were doing for a while, this is the image they would use. This is an action figure.
It's not even the actor. Yep.
Not the actor in, you know, not Ray Park in the gear. So I found that hilarious, for one. And it is without fail, they will use the Hot Toys Snake Eyes images over the actual images of the actual actor in the film. And I find that hilarious. To the point also, it's an amazing figure. I know you actually went into massive detail on your General's Joe's reviews on this one.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually... I'll put a link in the description as well to your review on this one, because again, you went ham on this. I believe it got 5 stars, Justin. I'm not joking.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it did. And when you mentioned the Hot Toys, like after I'd kind of landed on my choice, you started talking about the Hot Toys. I'm like, oh my, how did I not even think about the Hot Toys? Because I have all 4 of them. I have Joe Colton, Storm Shadow, Roadblock, and Snake Eyes, and they're works of art. You know, I mean, it's tough to even call them action figures. They are totally works of art. And the Snake Eyes just, it blew me away. You know, at the time, I don't think I had bought any Hot Toys figures before I bought G.I. Joe Retaliation Snake Eyes. And I was just kind of like, this is what these are. You know, this is what I've been missing. And I bought several other Hot Toys figures after that. I don't buy them anymore, but this kind of kicked off a miniature Hot Toys buying spree for
right.
me. Which, you know, for you know, cost alone, I could not possibly keep up. So that has stopped.
Yeah, that stopped after the first one you got, right?
Yeah, I mean, then went bankrupt.
They're amazing. Yeah, Hot Toys are incredible. Incredible. And I remember when these were going up, I actually got these. I got this one in Storm Shadow at a convention in the UK. They were actually a little bit cheaper as well at that point. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I jumped on them. I grabbed them both. But I had the funny story. I bought the Hot Toys Bruce Willis one. And I was going to say that the Joe Colton might have just edged it for me. Mm-hmm. Because that one is great as well.
I took a picture of it,
posted it on Instagram. And people were like, didn't know it was an action figure. They thought it was Bruce Willis. They thought, are you with Bruce Willis? Have you just taken a picture of Bruce Willis in like a, is he out in Norwich or something? I'm like, no, this is actually an action figure. And there's no hyperbole. People genuinely thought it was real.
Yeah.
And that's how good those Hot Toys figures are. Likeness alone, they're great. But Snake Eyes, I mean, it's just a helmet here. But it's just the textures, the different like elements and the details and the soft goods mixed with the armor and everything is and the accessories. It's just a beautiful, beautiful action figure. And so I went with that one for my favorite movie figure of all time. Let us know in the comments, guys, what your favorite movie figures are that kind of thing. What takes the lead for you? And I'll let you have Street Fighter figures in there as well, because I kind of feel that is like it crossed over. It's real. It happened. That's pretty much it though. Justin, dude, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's been great. It's been nice to get a little bit more time with you, squeeze close to an hour out. That's nice.
There you go.
But yeah, we really appreciate you doing this, buddy. And we'll be doing more movie news bursts very soon, because obviously that's going to ramp up crazy pants.
Oh yeah.
So we'll get a few more like smaller episodes out. But yeah, it was nice to have you on this kind of special monthly episode. And yeah, glad to have you back, mate.
Glad to be back. Thank you very much.
Appreciate no problem. Right then, guys, that's it for this installment of the Full Force Monthly. Thank you to my awesome co-host. That's not Pat or Adam, which I've got written on my script here because I didn't change it. To Justin, Generals Joe's, the General himself, just Generals Joe's reborn Bell. See you next month. And as always, Justin, I think you know what to do at the end of these episodes. It's been a while though, hasn't it?
Oh, I got it.
After three, one, two, three,
four.
Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on X, formerly Twitter, at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. We've also added a brand new Instagram, so check us out there as well, at The Full Force Podcast. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on any of those platforms with feedback and questions. We also have a Patreon page, so if you want to show your support for the show, see your name up in lights on these videos, or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/TheFullForcePodcast or click on the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force.